You're listening to the Sound Atlas.
Did you need water or anything?
No, I'm good, man.
Okay,
good.
Here we go.
I'm good.
Tommy Starr with you here on the Sound Atlas, and in the studio with me today, a gentleman you may or may not know, but you're going to meet him right here. I'm going to let you introduce yourself there, Phil.
Well, thank you, Tommy. My name is Philip Goodwin, and I am the guitarist for the band Blind Locomotive.
You are the guitarist for the band Blind Locomotive that's been around for about how long now?
Probably getting on close to about 3 years now.
Yeah. Wow, 3 years. Has it been that long already?
It has been that long.
Well, I do remember you weren't with Blind Locomotive when you were... Who were you playing with when you were at
If you want the backstory, I can give you the backstory.
I want all of the backstory.
Well, this is going to sound kind of weird, but I'm a school teacher by trade. Mm-hmm. I teach middle school mathematics on purpose. Yes, that's on purpose at Warren East Middle School. So I've been doing that for a long time. I had two of my former students. We put a little band together, but Brian Steiner played bass, and Ian Crow played drums. We got going, and we actually went by, we didn't go by the name Blind Locomotive, actually went by another name, and then those two finally stepped out. Mm-hmm. They finally stepped out, and so you've got the version that you're hearing now. So.
Well, I'm thinking when we used to do the deal over Spillway, that's the first time I met you. You were playing, were you actually in the band at that point?
Yes.
Or just popping up on stage jamming?
No, it was the band at that point, yeah.
Okay, so that was that band.
Yes.
That was Blind Locomotive.
Yeah, we were just going by another name at that point.
That's right. What were you going by at that point?
I don't even remember, Tommy.
I don't either. I'm sure I've got that written down somewhere.
Trying to put that out of my memory.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was a pretty jamming band.
Well, we didn't have a vocalist at that time, so we were just kind of, you know, we were just kind of playing instrumental at that point.
You had, Ronald up there?
Now, Ron played bass with us at first, but he was only with me for a short time. He had to step out. So it was basically, it was Brian that came along, and we stepped out and started playing.
Gotcha.
Ron was just, we were just at the house kind of messing around. So
I remember that. You guys get up there jamming. And one of the things I remember about you is your playing. I could tell, I was like, this dude really enjoys being on stage and rocking out. He's totally feeling this.
Absolutely, man. There's nothing like getting up on stage and playing live. Mm-hmm. It's the ultimate drug, for lack of a better term. You know, that's what I get on stage to play for. That's why I do what I do, because, you know, anybody that plays music, unless you're fully vested and you've put your whole time and your whole energy into it and you've got money to lean on, you're working a full-time job.
That's right.
And you're doing that on the side. Most people have to do that. So you got to sacrifice and do what you got to do to play. So if you're in it for the money, you're in it for the wrong reason, because you're gonna spend more money than you make more money, at least starting out anyway, until you get big.
That's absolutely true. I'm not a musician, but I've been around them enough that I know it costs a lot to get going, and once you get going, you're lucky if you make any of that money back. Usually a little, but not a lot. We talked a little bit about Blind Locomotive. We'll get back to Blind Locomotive. You mentioned school teacher. How did you get into that? What made you want to do that?
Well, my mom was a school teacher by trade, and so that was always something I had on the back corner. I was actually going to be a mechanical engineer. Was up at UK studying for mechanical engineering, and then got into a class called thermodynamics.
You've got one of those big brains, don't you?
Yeah, well, this class absolutely just kicked my butt. It was talking about fluid pressures and all this, and it was like reading stereo instructions, and went to the professor and said, look, man, I don't get this. And he's like, you might want to try something else. So I was like, oh, thanks a lot. So this was always kind of a you know, background thing. And so I'll never forget, I was up in Lexington, and there's a high school up there. It's Paul Lawrence Dunbar, and they're like a math science magnet school. And so I did some student observation out there for like 5 days during the summer, just trying to get into it. Stepped in the classroom, and this dude was there, and he was not happy about being there during the summer. So, but he was going through the motions. But I'm like, you know what? I can do this. I can absolutely do this. So I asked the guy. I said, you mind if I take over class one day? And he was like, go for it. So
really,
yeah. So I was like, when I got up there, it was like, I can do this. I can do this. And so that's it. Just kind of fell into that.
So this was something that was going on in the family. The family was involved in teaching
My mom.
Your mom. And you thought, well, that could be something to maybe fall back on, but I'm interested in doing this other thing.
Right.
And then one day you just happened to be at the right place at the right time. And he said, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
And you took it.
And just kind of ran with it.
Yeah. You have to have a lot of education to be a teacher, don't you?
Well, you got to have a lot of guts and a lot of stupidity to be a teacher, because you're to get in there and do what we have to do for a living. It requires a special kind of stupid to do it. So you're gonna.
Well, I mean, you gotta have a. I think you gotta have a big brain. I think you gotta love the kids. You gotta love what you do. Because it seems like it can be vexing sometimes.
Well, I'll tell you though, Tommy, I really do enjoy my day job, and not because I'm the best teacher in the world, but I know how to motivate kids, and I know how to relate to the kids, and I know how to get them to want to give out and respect me. And
That's nice, because you know, if you're going to be a teacher, you got to be all in, don't you?
Yeah, you got to. I mean, you got to do it the right way. Yeah. But what's really cool is, and this is why the music has been such an instrumental part of what I do. You know, I go to school during the day and do my day thing, and when I leave, I'm done. I'm all about the music when I leave. So all these practices, all these shows, all the stuff that I do, it makes my day at work more enjoyable, because I know once I'm done there, I'm getting ready to do something I really enjoy.
Yeah. Well, so music has always been a part of your life, and then the teaching came in later as like a career, a job, something to take you.
You got to pay the bills.
Exactly. But you kept the rocking going. Let's talk a little bit about music. We mentioned a little bit about Blind Locomotive. Let's talk about, as you were growing up, some bands that were into. What influenced you?
Oh, yeah.
I like to ask people this. What did you see or what did you hear that made you go, oh, this is like the coolest thing ever?
Well, see, it's funny you ask that question, because when you listen to music growing up, there are certain things that you hear that just make an impact on you, and you remember those for the rest of your life. And so I've had several of those come down through me growing up. 1980, Back in Black. It just had a phenomenal impact on me, the whole album, the way it just stuck. And then if you go on from there, 1983, Judas Priest, Screaming for Vengeance. Just an incredible album from front to back, not a weak spot anywhere. And I wore that cassette out, just wore it out, because it was that good. And then you get to the Salad Days in 1987, where you got The Cult, Electric comes out, and then you got Guns N' Roses, Appetite for Destruction. Just, I mean, those two albums were just phenomenal in how they just did everything. And then you had to wait a little bit more and get to like 94 when Soundgarden comes out with Super Unknown. And that's just like, that's the quintessential grunge album, but it's probably the one album of the grunge era that just holds true. And, you know, everything else is a derivative of that.
So many people always, when they speak of grunge, they always immediately go for Nirvana, of course.
Right.
And I get it, but there's so many other great bands, and I like the fact that you mentioned Soundgarden. Give them a little love.
That's right. And then, you know, after the grunge era, you know, music has just evolved into so many different directions. It's hard to find those that one eclectic album that just has that meaning for you. But in 1999, Mr. Zakk Wylde nailed it with Book of Shadows. That thing from front to back is just amazing, and you sit and listen to it, and it resonates within you. It really does. It's
to me, it's a little melancholy, just a little bit.
But it's just the way he sings and the way he plays. It's incredible.
It's mostly he and an acoustic, isn't it?
Yes, but like I said, it's so powerful when you listen to it. Now, you keep going along a little farther, and then it's really hard to find something until about 2004 when Clutch knocked out Blast Tyrant. Blast Tyrant from front to back is just, there's not a weak spot in it. And it's just phenomenal. It's one of those albums you can put on and it just rolls and rolls and rolls and rolls again. So, you know, that's just been phenomenal. But it's been hard to find anything lately. It really has, to find that quintessential album. So the closest thing that I would probably say, Zakk Wylde actually has the new band that he's got. Well, not the new band, but
Zakk Sabbath.
No, not Zakk Sabbath, but his version.
Black Label Society.
Yeah, Black Label Society. Uh-huh. Yeah, he put out an album early this year called Grimace Tits, and it's, oh my God, it's phenomenal from front to back.
Big fat chunky.
Yes, it is. It is. And so, like I said, those albums are kind of hard to find, few in between. But that's one you can put on and listen from front to back, and it's just solid all the way through.
So you have all those in your collection. Are those favorite bands or just favorite albums?
Those are the albums that just, you know, those are the resonators, the ones that you can go back to and just drop it in and just let it play front to back, and you got it made. You don't have to do anything. If I'm working outside, I'll put one of those on and I'm good to go.
Do you have a favorite album of all time?
Wow. A favorite album of all time. That's a Okay, I tell you what, I do have a favorite. Well, I say a favorite artist of all time. Can I do that?
Because
they've got many bands.
All right,
or many albums they've done. Without a doubt, Judas Priest.
Judas Priest is your favorite band of all time. That's great. I love it.
The way that they play makes you want to pick up a guitar and play. That's what made me want to pick up and play a guitar was Judas Priest. Mm-hmm. You go back and listen to their, and I'm not talking about the stuff in 83, which was, you know, Screaming for Vengeance and Defenders of the Faith were just phenomenal. You go back and you listen to some of their earlier stuff like Sin After Sin, Victim of Changes, you know, the early stuff was just phenomenal. You can go back and listen to it, and it's just as powerful as the stuff that they put out in the 80s, and just as powerful as the stuff they're putting out now. If you've heard the new Firepower album that they've got, oh my God, that's phenomenal.
It is good.
Yeah.
It's very good.
They have not sacrificed a thing. They've stayed true to their sound, and what they do is fantastic. But you listen to any Judas Priest song, you pick it up and you want to go pick up a guitar and play. You really do. But that's what got me started, was listening to those riffs that KK and Glenn threw down and you just want to play.
You say Judas Priest favorite band. So let's say someone's listening right now. They've heard of Judas Priest. They don't know much about them. Give me one album by Judas Priest they need to check out.
Well, obviously, the Screaming for Vengeance is that's the quintessential metal album that you want to hear. But if you want to hear some stuff that you've never heard before that'll just blow you away, go get Sad Wings of Destiny. That was their second album, released on Gull Records, and it's got Victim of Changes on there and just a ton of other stuff, and it's a magical album. Again, it's a front to back, but it's not the Judas Priest you would recognize from 1983.
Oh, no.
Yeah, the sound, you know, you could tell the sounds back then. It's back then there, but it's just amazing stuff.
As most bands, Judas Priest is a perfect example. If you start with the first album and roll forward, it's progress the whole way. But once they hit, I would say their sound now, to me, kind of a combination, Screaming for Vengeance and Ram It Down. Ram It Down was a real heavy album for them.
Yes.
Of course, it seems like now they've backed off that just a touch and thrown more of that melody in, like what they had with Screaming for Vengeance, maybe even a touch of Defenders of the Faith.
Yeah.
Of course, we're way chopping this up, but that's okay. But your personal favorite, you would say?
Screaming for Vengeance.
Definitely.
I'm also really partial to British Steel, too. British Steel is just, it's phenomenal as well. I mean, you could sit there and you could listen to Judas Priest albums all day and find great songs on every album.
That's true.
But Screaming for Vengeance really resonates with me because there's not a weak song on the album, and it's just killer from front to back. It really is. It's
anytime I talk with someone about Judas Priest and they start naming off albums, they never name my favorite Judas Priest album, which is fine, but I'm always amazed that I'm like, why is it that I like Point of Entry so much?
Oh, Point of Entry is great too.
Yeah.
It just didn't have a lot of hits that were commercial.
That's true.
And so you
headed out to the highway here every day.
Well, you see, that was about the only video that they ever put out was Headed Out to the Highway.
They did that. They did the Hot Rockin' and they did Don't Go, but they didn't get as much airplay. I mean, you would see Hot Rockin' every once in a while, but Headed Out to the Highway was like the song on that. But for me, side two, you flip it over, that's my favorite. Those five songs on side two, that to me is my all-time favorite Priest. Flip it over, side B.
And see, that's great, man.
And there's nothing on there that was a hit song.
Yeah.
Solar Angels is really popular, though.
Yes.
But that's about it. But I love Troubleshooter. Mm-hmm. You Say Yes.
I Say No. Yeah.
That's great stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I love it. So Judas Priest, one of your favorites. You say your all-time favorite band.
Probably. I'd be hard-pressed to find somebody better than them.
Who's a close second?
Probably AC/DC.
AC/DC.
Just because of the volume of stuff that they've put out, it's kind of hard to argue with them. They've always been phenomenal.
Do you have a favorite AC/DC with Bond on lead vocals?
Oh man, it doesn't matter. I like everything. I will say this: I like every AC/DC song they ever made, except for one.
Oh, which one?
I can't stand Money Talks. That's a weak song.
Money Talks. But I get what you're saying with that.
Yeah.
Every song, but Money Talks.
Yeah, I can listen to any AC/DC song except for that one. That one comes on, I'm turning off that.
So you like every song off flick of the switch?
Whole album. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with it.
That's a pretty grungy album, and that to me one of their raw sounding albums. kind of raw as in it sounds like somebody said, you know, plug in and go.
There you go.
I mean, not super polished, and I like
I mean, you get some of the best stuff that way. Mm-hmm. You know, when we're recording at my basement, you know, when we're doing stuff, we just turn the recorder on and go. Mm-hmm. And you get some of the best stuff coming out of there.
I completely agree. Again, I'm not a musician, but some of my favorite music has that kind of feel to it. And I don't know if it's on purpose or it just happens to be recorded and sounds that way. But when it sounds like it's not completely polished all down to the...
Yeah.
It's got a little bit of that raw fringe to it. I like that.
Yeah.
That's the good stuff. That's the little extra something, whatever that is, that just... It gives it... I don't know. There's something there. I don't know what to call it. Well, but I dig it.
Well, it's like the Van Halen's Hot for Teacher. If you listen to that song and go back and listen to the recording, you can hear him kicking beer bottles around on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
During the recording,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't take it out, they left it in.
Mm-hmm.
So that's awesome.
So you like Van Halen too?
Oh yeah, Van Halen's great.
Yeah, Van Halen. Are you Sammy or Dave, or do you
Dave. Diamond Dave.
Dave all the way.
Diamond Dave. Now, don't get me wrong, Sammy's good.
I love Sammy.
And Montrose has they could stand alone on their own,
mm-hmm.
but the Diamond Dave version, that's that's the stuff.
Now, concerts. What was your first concert?
Oh man, now you're going back. I'll tell you what. I can't remember my first concert because probably too young, but I remember my best concert.
Okay.
Without a doubt, hands down, best show I ever saw in my life was Stevie Ray Vaughan at 1988, the year before he died in Louisville,
mm-hmm.
And Jeff Beck opened up for him.
Oh, the Fire and the Fury tour.
Oh, my God. What an incredible show.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff Beck comes out and plays, and I'm just blown away by him because, you know, he doesn't play with a pick. He plays with the edge of his thumb, so he gets all these amazing tones with his thumb.
Mm-hmm.
And he came out and played for about, I'd say, for about an hour and a half, and I was blown away, and I was like, man, there's no way anybody's going to top him.
Mm-hmm.
Wrong. Mm. Mr. Vaughan comes out and plays for about, seemed like about 10 hours, but I think he played for about 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And just, I was mesmerized. Just absolutely mesmerized.
That's cool you got to see that tour.
I sat there and watched, and it seemed like he never played the same thing twice.
Mm-hmm.
But I was just amazed at what a human being could do with a guitar. And that's, you know, he's one of my heroes.
Nice.
He is one of my heroes, yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Now, have you had an opportunity to meet any of your favorite artists? Anybody famous?
Nah, I have met William Shatner, but that's about it.
Well, William Shatner's pretty cool.
Yeah, I was actually working at a Kroger up in Lexington, and he has a farm there in Versailles,
mm-hmm.
or at least he did at the time, and I was working there one day, and he comes through, and I was like, hi, Mr. Shatner, you know, because he, you know, celebrities, they don't want you to stop them. You know, they're people like everybody else.
Well, some don't. Some of them get offended if they are not recognized.
But I was going through the store and I saw him coming. I was like, "Hello, Mr. Shatner," and he goes, "I used to be." You know,
like, that's it.
That's it. And I was just like, okay, I can mm-hmm. just tell he didn't want to be bothered. But that was my brush with fame, so to speak.
Wow, that's pretty cool. So you've been to a lot of concerts?
Oh yeah, I've been to. Too many to count. Too many T-shirts bought.
Mm-hmm.
Too much. Too many miles put on to count. It's.
Do you have a music collection?
Oh yeah, I've got. I still own all my cassettes. Mm-hmm. Every cassette I ever bought back in the 80s and 70s, I still have at home.
Yeah.
And then of course CDs.
Is there anything really cool in the collection? Like, oh man, let me tell you what I got. I got this certain pick from somebody. I got this certain nothing like that.
Nah, I'm not a big gotta have this, you know, gotta have this. It's just like, you know, if I've got their music, I'm happy.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
All right.
So just something I can play over and over and over again.
Sure. So all of this growing up, all these bands we've mentioned growing up, all this just kept rolling and rolling and kind of built in, and you said, man, I wanna be one of those dudes.
That's exactly it.
You got the guitar.
You hear these seminal albums come mm-hmm. out that are so incredible, and it just stirs you to play. And then it's like, again, when I heard Judas Priest, I'm like, dude, I got to pick up a guitar and I got to learn to play like these guys.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and it's, well, you know, and it's not that hard to learn how to play bar chords. It's really not.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're an aspiring musician and you like somebody, pick up a guitar, plug in, learn how to play a bar chord, and in a couple of weeks, you could pretty much sound like them. You know, you can get the main chords down. Now, as far as the solos and the transitions and everything, that's a different story.
Mm-hmm.
But you get that sound and you get to play, and when you finally like, oh God, I sound like them, and it just makes you want to go more and do more and do more. So it's really addictive.
Well, when did you get your first guitar?
When I was 14.
Mm-hmm.
Got it when I was 14 here in Bowling Green. And I can't remember the name of the shop, but it's over there by Mellow Matt's, there was a music store right there on the edge.
DB's Music?
DB's Music. That's it. And I'll never forget the story. I'll never forget how I got it. I used to go, when I was in middle school and high school, I played alto sax. And so you got to buy reeds to play alto sax. So that's where I bought my stuff at. Mm-hmm. So I would go in there and get my reeds. And of course, if you're a young kid and you see all these music shops and you see the guitars on the wall and you're like, oh, I want that. I want that.
That's so cool.
That's so cool. Mm-hmm. So I'll never forget. They had this cherry red Kramer Pacer up on the wall, the kind like Eddie Van Halen used to play. Uh-huh. And so I kept my eye on that and I was like, I want that. But I wasn't going to have enough money. It was like originally $1,500 when it was up on the wall. And I was like, I'm not going to get that. Mm-hmm. Well, it kind of stayed there in the store. Nobody picked it up. And they dropped the price a little bit, you know, here and there. And then finally it got down to like $900. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I still want that. And then the place was going out of business. Uh-huh. It went out of business. And so they had a special half off for preferred customers. If you were a customer that had been there forever, half off anything in the store. I was there the day that the sale started with all my lawn mowing money and everything that I had saved up. And I paid $468.13 for that guitar.
Wow. And one time you saw it on the wall for $1,500.
But they had dropped the price and then they took half off. So with tax, it was $468.13.
Do you still have that guitar?
I still do.
That's nice.
Yes.
That's very cool. So you got that when you were 14 and you still have it today.
Still have it today.
And you got to keep that guitar.
Oh, yeah. That's that. Like I said, stuff, you know, if the house was to go up in flames, you know.
Hopefully not.
If the house was to go up in flames, that's what I'm grabbing. Everything else.
Your wife and your guitar.
Yeah, my wife and guitar. Yeah, those are the two things that are unreplaceable. So.
Do you have any children?
Got one. Mm-hmm. My son Timothy is a senior at Western. Mm-hmm. He's in electrical engineering and just kicking butt all over the place.
Is he into music?
He can, yeah. Oh, yeah. I would say yes. Mm-hmm. He's in the band at Western.
So. Oh, nice.
So he does. He plays tenor sax for the band. He does pretty much whatever the band does. He does. Mm-hmm. So he's in electrical engineering and doing the band.
Dang.
So he doesn't have enough time to get in trouble. He stays pretty busy.
That's good.
And I like it that way.
Yeah, we don't want him to get in trouble because getting in trouble could just screw you up and cause problems later. Now let's go back to the guitar real quick. You still have that guitar? How many guitars do you have?
About seven or eight.
Seven or eight guitars? Mm-hmm. Is that the one that you got when you were 14? Is that the favorite?
Well, I still love it, but the one that I play now is a blue, it's a Starburst blue Gibson Epiphone, and it's the tone on it is just amazing.
Did you take lessons or self-taught?
Self-taught. Except, okay, I taught myself how to play up until probably about 6-7 years ago. Mm-hmm. I went to Bobby Baldwin when he was still with us and learned some solo theory lessons from him for about 2 years. Mm-hmm. And Bobby, phenomenal teacher, just phenomenal. He kind of unlocked the secrets of how to solo and how to do the things that you need to do. So I took lessons from him for about 2 years on how to do the solo stuff.
Nice.
And after that, it's all about practicing and practicing and practicing. And then more practicing to get better.
Well, and then the same thing with a band. When you get a band, the more you practice, the better you get, the tighter you get, the more you know the songs ins and out, right?
See, that's the thing nobody realizes. You see somebody up on stage and you have no idea how many countless hours they've put in behind the scenes working on songs, working on every little nuance of the song, because you don't go up there and sound, you don't want to go up there and sound like crap. You've got to go up there and you want to knock it dead. And
it's kind of like what you said before. Practice, they don't know how much practice and how much money you've put into that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They come in, they pay $5. Well, for that $5 performance, you've put countless hours and countless cash.
The money doesn't equal out the time that you put behind it. But again, it's not about the money. Mm-hmm. I mean, some people would disagree with me on that, but it's not about the money. It's about how much do you enjoy doing it? Like I tell my kids at school, I said, the most important thing you can do is find a job that you enjoy doing.
Absolutely.
Because there's tons of people out there in the real world now that have good jobs, but they absolutely hate what they do.
Yep.
And you go and you do that every day and you come home and you're just devastated. Mm-hmm. And that's why people turn to drinking and drugs and everything else, because they hate their life because they hate their job.
That's right.
So you find something you enjoy doing and go with it. And so, you know, teaching's a good job. I do enjoy it, and it pays the bills. Would I like to play music for a living? Oh, heck yeah. Mm-hmm. But let's talk about real world here. You got to pay the bills.
It's nice you get to do both, though, right?
But that's what I'm saying. It's cool. I go and do my school thing during the day, and then when I leave the school, I don't think about it until I go back the next day. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about the music.
Yeah.
So
we've come full circle back to Blind Locomotive. That's the band that you're in right now. Been around for, I believe you said, 3 years.
Yeah, about 3 years, yeah.
You guys have been in the studio, recorded some songs. You've played some gigs.
Yes.
Seems like last time I saw you, you told me you guys were going to work on some more songs.
Yes.
So that's coming up in the future.
We've actually got our set list is up to 12 songs now. Mm-hmm. We've got 12 originals that we can do anytime, anywhere.
Now, you mostly do original too,
no,
right?
No, it's not mostly. It's all original.
All original.
Yeah.
See, I like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't have a problem with a band doing covers once in a while, but I think it's cool that you guys are actively trying to put your own music in the set.
And I'll tell you this, you know, I can't tell you how many countless people have told me, you need to learn cover songs. You need to learn cover songs. And, you know, I'm like, that's fine if I'm wanting to make money and that's what I'm really all about is making the money. Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe I'll learn a couple of cover songs, but I'm not about the money. I'm about mm-hmm. wanting to get up on stage and play mm-hmm. something. I'll tell you, Tommy, here's what it all boils down to. You get up on stage and you play something that you helped put together and you play it live and you see one person smile or get off on something that you helped put together. That's all I need. Mm-hmm. That's all I need to see is somebody enjoying something that I helped put together.
You guys do have a lot of great original songs. I've, of course, heard some of them, played some of them, seen you live, heard some newer ones that mm-hmm. you guys are probably working on now or going to be working on in the future. Mm-hmm. So I actually like that. Plus, you guys are a good live band because I can tell that you're digging what you're doing. We've talked about that.
You got to have fun while you're up there.
Absolutely.
You cannot be afraid to get up there and just be yourself. Mm-hmm. And I'll get into this part about it. You know, it's like the image, and that's a big topic with me. Everybody, it just seems like the music industry today, it's all about how you look. It's mm-hmm. not even about how you sound. It's about how you look. You got to have the right look to make it in the music industry. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't care about that. Mm-hmm. I'm going to, you know, everybody said you got to have blue jeans and a concert t-shirt to get up there and play. And I'm like, no, I'm not going to do that. Mm-hmm. I'm going to wear what I wear up on stage. And so I am comfortable in khaki shorts. So by God, I'm going to get up there and wear what I want to wear. So I got some pretty decent, I got a couple of really cool shirts in Memphis. My wife went on vacation with this last vacation. And so I wear, they look like bowling shirts is what they look like, but they're
things are cool though.
Yeah, but they are cool. So I wear, if you want to say lack of a better term, I wear bowling shirts and khakis and Vans. And I know I look like a big dork up there, but you know what? I'm completely happy being a big dork on stage.
That did not enter my mind. The last time I saw you guys out of Spillway, that never entered my mind. I was just checking out the tunes. I thought the songs were good, and I could tell that you guys are having a good time.
And that's what's important. It's not so much, you don't want to look like a bum up on stage, but you've got to bring the music. If mm-hmm. your music's false, if you're about the image and your music doesn't have it, no one's going to care. They're not really going to listen. But if you're bringing original music and you're having fun and it's authentic, people are going to recognize that, and they're going to enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's about.
Yeah. Where are you guys on the web?
We actually have a temporary website, www.blindlocomotive.x10host.org. So mm-hmm. we're still working that out, but
basically just punch in Blind Locomotive Kentucky, it'll probably pop up.
It'll pop up. We're on all the social media. So mm-hmm. we're on Facebook, you know, just whatever you want out there, we're out there. So just
seems like you guys have some stuff posted on YouTube and other stuff like that.
The last the five songs, and I'm going to give a tip out to the guy that does our recording out at Plot 13 Studios. Mm-hmm. Mike Etherton out there at Plot 13 Studios. That is that's where we go and record our stuff because mm-hmm. he's just amazing.
Muck's a good dude.
Yes, he really is. And so the five songs we've done out there, we've actually recorded and we've put them out there on YouTube for everybody to listen to because mm-hmm. I want everybody to hear them.
Sure.
You know, take a listen.
So what do you think the next move for you guys? What's coming up with Blind Locomotive?
We've got next big thing we got right now is we have a concert in December the 8th up in Louisville. And we're going to be open. We're going to be the opener for there's five bands playing that night. Mm-hmm. The bands are, and they're not, pop, they're not like big around here, but they're like semi-national acts. That's what I call them because mm-hmm. they're all around. One's called Eve to Adam, and another one's called Super Bob. Mm-hmm. And so the guy that helped set up, his name is Terry Harper. He's a phenomenal producer.
I know Terry. Terry's a good dude.
Phenomenal producer out of Louisville. And mm-hmm. so I've been working with him trying to get us on up there, and he finally said, you know what? You guys, I want y'all on this show. Mm-hmm. So it's us and then two other openers I don't even know, but I know we're going to probably be the opening act, the first one. So
five bands. That's coming up December the 8th in Louisville.
That's on a Saturday.
Where?
It's at Trixie's.
Trixie's. It's half strip bar, half live venue. I get it. You don't have to go to the strip side. You can come to the other side. Well, it's all good.
What they do is they convert it on rock nights. Mm-hmm. They kind of push the stage back a little bit, uh-huh. and they clear it out. So yeah. it's not a strip bar those nights.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. So those of you out there that know, it's all good. Those of you that don't let it freak you out. It's no big deal.
I had a buddy of mine said, "You do realize it's a strip bar?" And I said, "Yes.
Sometimes.
Sometimes.
So everybody jump on the web there. Blind Locomotive. Just punch that in. Blind Locomotive, Kentucky. And as you heard Phil say, there's music on there. You can go to YouTube and see some live footage of the band.
Reverb Nation, all the iTunes, all that stuff. We're out there, so it's all good.
Now, we're getting ready to wrap it up. Do you have anything else that you want to say, talk about, ask me, anything at all? This is all you.
Okay. Well, I will say this. I'd like to offer a word of encouragement for anybody that's trying to play local, anybody that's just starting out. Mm-hmm. You got to be perseverant. You got to have a tough, thick skin, and you got to be willing to take a lot of setbacks before you get where you're going, because it's hard to be an original band and try to get out there. It really is, because a lot of these places that that will have you come up and do music, they've got to have their bottom dollar. So they're gonna have cover bands come in. They're gonna have people that they already know that are established, and so it's hard to get your foot in the door. It really is. And so my advice for anybody that's wanting to start out local music, you've got to be tough. You got to be perseverant and understand that it's going to be tough trying to get your foot in the door, and you've got to do it again and again and again. And don't be upset. Don't cry when they say, "Oh, we can't do this." Mm-hmm. It's just that's the way it is.
Yeah.
So it's sometimes you get depressed about it because you're like, "Man, I'm never going to get a gig here." But then you got to keep at it.
Stay at it.
You got to stay at it.
Yeah. I know you guys have had some good gigs. One of the places I know you've had some good gigs is down at Overtime in Franklin.
Oh, yeah. I love Overtime down in Franklin. Yeah. Those guys are wonderful down there.
Well, hopefully we can get you back down there.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So December the 8th in Louisville at Trixie's.
Yes.
You guys, four of the bands, probably you will be the opener.
I'm assuming.
It's your first time up in Louisville, right?
Yes, it actually is. It's a big show for us because we're, you know, those particular shows, that kind of show, you're not really going to get paid for it. Matter of fact, you have to sell tickets to get on the bill.
I know what you're talking about.
You got to sell tickets to get on that bill. You're not going up to make a dollar. You're going up to play in front of a crowd.
Sure.
And that's what, you know, and of course, that's what it's about anyway.
And somewhat, maybe we could say somewhat of an audition to see how you are.
Exactly.
Say, well, let me get those guys back that were here on December the 8th. They were all right to put on a good show.
It's the behind. It's like I said, it's the work you're willing to put in to get the show. You know, if you're willing to talk to people again and again and again, and you're willing to go out and sell tickets, and you're willing to go out and practice three times a week, and you're willing to lose sleep and be tired the next morning when you go to work, that's what it takes.
What time do you have to be at work Monday through Friday?
Well, I get up at 5. I got to get up at 5 to get my whole act together. I got to be at work at about 7 o'clock.
That's just crazy.
Yeah, that's the real world, baby.